Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
Not a Thing podcast, episode 105.
Live 105.
Or
Don't sue us.
please sponsor us.
Episode subsonic. No way.
I'm pretty sure they wouldn't actually I don't know if they would, if a radio station would want to sponsor a podcast. I feel like that takes away from their kind of core audience.
Yeah, that might be not the best business model.
That's why I'm always surprised that they on a lot of stations they're pushing like apps that you can listen to them with, and I feel like if I can use an app to listen to any radio station, why would I pick yours, really? If it's really going to give me like choices all over the place and I can potentially avoid, commercials via it, I feel like it's just not the best idea for them, but
Listening to the radio is kind of like being in a hostage situation. Like traditionally, you do that while you're in the car, because now, we have TVs, you don't sit around the radio at home it so much. But when you're driving in your car, you had limited options prior to iPhones and podcasts. Like, this is what's available. Sometimes there's only one, and it's only playing mariachi music. And you will listen to that and enjoy it. Like, radio Stockholm syndrome.
Well, now hopefully you're listening to our podcast, and you don't feel like it's a hostage situation at all.
You can press stop at any time.
As
You
long
just
as
won't know
you,
what happens next.
yeah, as long as you, hit play again afterwards, it'd be great, actually. Speaking of that kind of teaser about what happens next, I'm sure everyone's familiar with that kind of brand of clickbait on Facebook and in other parts of the internet, but Facebook especially, sites from like Upworthy and actually, I feel like that's the only one I can identify, and when I see it, I immediately don't click on it. But those kinds of sites, the ones that are mostly video related, they'll have some kind of teaser saying, "You'll never believe what happened next." Etc. Those kinds of blatant ad generating clickbait are getting kind of a little bit of press around Facebook, mostly in the negative column. So much that Facebook released a press release saying that they're going to modify their page ranking algorithms to supposedly suppress the most egregious kinds of clickbait out there. And
I
if
like that they
you
did this after they changed their algorithms to try and make people depressed. Like, that's what they think of first. Oh, we'll stop spamming for people. No, let's mess with their psyches first.
Well, this is also messing with people's psyches a little bit because it's because one of the arguments that I've seen for clickbait is that it's often it often, ranks higher because it has a lot of likes. And I mean, they're kind of implying, at least to me, that if I guess I'm inferring this. Okay, anyway, let's not bring back Alan's Grammar Corner, full time. The thing that I see with that is that these posts have a lot of likes, but what Facebook is saying is that that's a disproportionate number of likes, and it's probably manipulated in some way. So what they're saying is their algorithm can be manipulated, so they're gonna like manipulate their algorithm to compensate, which I guess is sort of fair, but also kind of indicative of a somewhat broken system. I don't know, but the way that they're tweaking the algorithm is they're noticing how quickly people come back from clicking on a link. So if people click on a link, which means they're going to see that other content, and they immediately hit the back button and it becomes another hit on Facebook's site, then they know, oh, that content probably wasn't worth it, and then they'll rank it further down. I think that's
Never
a
worth it.
good, well, sorry?
That content is never worth it. Every single one of those I've clicked on is like, oh, this is an interesting idea. Nope. About a paragraph, and that's about it. No new ideas, like nothing I didn't already know.
Right. I think it's an interesting way to do that, and that's a good way to kind of gauge, you know, the worthiness of that content. My issue with that is they can tell what I do when I leave and then come back. It's like, oh no, you can't get away. So I guess that's true, right? They can tell that it's not necessarily the same session. I mean, they just know that there's a hit from your IP address before and then a hit afterwards and the time in between, and they can put together that that was you leaving then coming back. Of course, I'm sure if the following site has Facebook ads kind of set up, they can track your movement through that site too. Oh, it makes you want to just set up, you know, the Onion router and then browse completely anonymously.
Well, one thing I noticed in the press release itself is they showed some examples of clickbait, and they're really effective. Like, I wanted to click on it. Like, there's an article from The Atlantic about eating fish and how it's good for your brain. I don't care about that, but the picture they use is some delicious-looking sushi. Now I want sushi. Or there's one with a shrimp cocktail. Maybe I'm just hungry. I don't know. It's dinner time.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of dinner time.
Photography and food is a dangerous combination. Thanks, Internet.
Right. Second only to cats, I think. Photos of food is definitely a thing on the Internet.
And depending on where you're clicking from, those two things are the same.
Well, kind of speaking of food, that's actually one of the things that came up very highly in a list of things people are doing when they're supposed to be on conference calls. One of the biggest providers of conference calls, I think it's Intercall, had a survey of what distracts you when you're on a conference call, or what are you multitasking when you're on that conference call. And what was really interesting was that there is a lot of stuff that distracts people. I mean, I'm not 100% sure what the numbers are in terms of how distracted people are, but I know that when I'm on conference calls, I tend to be maybe, I don't know, 20% disengaged just at any time. There's just something that can distract me and often does. And if I'm not, obviously, if I'm not speaking during the call, then I might glance at my email or kind of, you know, daydream a little bit. But this is much more elaborate. This is being genuinely distracted during a call. And so this was, if you're, and again, the only reason I'm a little, like, I don't understand how these numbers worked was there's percentages in the link or in the article, which we'll link, but the percentages are more than 100%. So I don't know if that means people are so distracted during the calls, they're doing multiple things. And that's what these other options are. But there are things like doing other work. And that was above 60%, I think. And answering email was also in the kind of 50% range. Kind of surprising was eating was 45%. I think if you're on a conference call and eating, you should probably be shot.
Or if you're calling technical support and you're eating, that same thing applies.
At least be on mute if you're, you know, if you're eating. But I can't imagine how you can be engaged in a conversation and just eating. That's just bad form. Everyone knows that.
Well, I like the numbers they put together. It was 6% taking another phone call.
That's absolute dedication.
You're clearly working too hard.
I think the only more disturbing one was that the number of people who are on conference calls in the conference calls in the bathroom was something like 44%. Also 100% not a thing. I have been on the other end of a, actually it was a tech support call, and there was a hold on and clearly a toilet flush immediately afterwards.
Well, at least they gave a shit about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, as you know, full disclosure, I do work for a company that makes conference calling software. But I think there is a little more accountability because the conference calling software, we kind of encourage people to turn their webcams on.
Please be careful with that.
Right. One of the big jokes about it was that, does that mean I can't take my morning conference calls in my pajamas anymore? And I'm like, pajamas? I mean, that's one of the beauties of like an audio only format, you know, like a podcast. Boy, howdy. So, yeah, I think, you know, as long as conference calls and meetings are a thing, I think people will be distracted. It's really up to the people in the call to make it, you know, interesting. It has to be worth their time to be engaged. So I think those, you know, the other things people do are just symptoms that those conference calls are just boring as hell.
Well, we've been really, really well trained as a society to multitask and maximize our productivity as much as possible.
Yeah. America.
Previous generations, not so much. That, you know, it's like, oh, you do this thing. Oh, we got to till that field? Okay, I'm going to go till that field. All right, that's done. Next thing.
Well, if I can till that field while I'm, you know, updating my Facebook status, then you know, we can make it work.
What I'm saying is we need more hands. That's the limiting factor. More right. Hands, more ears. Like one eye. Anything more than that might be kind of... I don't know, two more eyes. You could have two more eyes.
Sure.
Before it gets really weird. Yeah. I mean, it's still weird, but it's not really weird. Now, four eyes, literal four eyes is not a deal breaker.
Well, they would have a lot of fun tracking all four eyes, I think. There's a joint experiment that's being run between some psychologists and some folks that make movies. I mean, eye tracking for user research is kind of a common thing. It's used a lot for commercials and for websites. To really optimize what people are doing for, you know, especially for commercials to tell, like, you know, where your eye is looking. So let's maximize the product placement or things like that. And for websites, so they can optimize where content is, mostly for ads. But some psychologists are working with filmmakers and video game makers to some extent to track people's eyes, not necessarily for ads, or at least I hope not, product placement in movies notwithstanding, but it's doing so in order to make better movies and better video games, which I think we can all agree should be a thing.
Yes.
But the interesting thing for the article was that they were using as the use case one of the beginning scenes of Iron Man 2 where there's some stuff blowing up, and they noticed that just during the sequence when they measured what people are looking at and what people aren't directly looking at, people are looking at faces and things that are real, whether they knew they were real or not. So there's a scene in the movie, and there's a bunch of stuff that's computer-generated, and the computer-generated stuff, it's almost as if people were automatically ignoring it and looking at the people's faces and how things were bouncing around, kind of, you know, the effects of physics. And the current hypothesis about that is that it's hard to computer generate a face or realistic physics in kind of a model physics in an unrealistic way. So by focusing on, you know, focusing kind of on making sure that the real elements are actually real people, you know, the brain will correctly ignore all the stuff that is computer generated. I mean, that still supports what's happening on screen, whether you understand it or not. And I thought that was an interesting hypothesis.
Real is good. I actually just finally watched The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah?
Reboot.
Uh-huh.
And that was something that stuck out to me a lot, was it's just all CGI.
Yeah.
Like, I've played Avengers video games, and it looks the same. I mean, it's slightly better animation. So, it's like none of this has any grounding in reality.
Yeah. That is kind of a rough kind of thing with Spider-Man, especially. I remember in when it was the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans, my joke was after the first one, and it really came true after the second and third one, there has to be some reason, I don't know why, but his mask comes off or is burned off or is shot off or something such that they show his face. And part of me was like, oh, that's so they can get, you know, Toby some more screen time. But what it really is doing is they're trying to insert more of a like human element into those scenes towards the end of the film where it's like big and climactic. Because otherwise, if it's just a big CGI fest, it might as well, you know, not be anybody in those suits.
I might as well be controlling it with my controller. Which would be fun.
Yeah, it would be, for sure. I think I remember the Spider-Man games for, I mean, I guess it was maybe, it might have been Xbox, like the original Xbox, like ages ago, when they modeled New York City. And I that was one of the cooler like things about it, was that it was one of, you know, an open world kind of game. And it was more kind of superhero like in that you could just kind of go wherever and there would be crimes wherever they would be and you would deal with them. And I thought that was nice. If not a little kind of boring, because after a while it's like you can only do so many rescuing cats from trees and things like that.
Right.
It shows how really mundane it is to be a superhero. Oh, another robbery. Oh, my gosh. But I think that's an interesting kind of tack about it. Like the making, you know, real stuff in movies be a thing only because that's what your eye naturally focuses on. You know, moving away from a lot of, you know, purely CG effects, or at least, you know, hybridizing it. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for having some amount of models in the space, because I think, you know, and I think this confirms it, you know, your eye can tell when it's CG. There's just something kind of extra about it that, you can kind of pick it apart. And so having models and practical effects and like actual people doing stuff helps a lot, especially for, you know, kind of big budget movies where they're doing stuff that, you know, isn't real. Like they're not blowing up San Francisco every summer, right?
Or twice this year.
So you know that there's, you know, that has to be, you know, a little bit of CG, but having everything else involved in the shots to kind of help you suspend that disbelief, that's definitely a thing. And it has some interesting implications for psychology too. So it's nice to have that kind of bridge of stuff working. It's using movies for good.
Until they use it for evil commerce.
When they start adding the ads to like people's faces somehow in order to to kind of work with that, you know, where your eye's drawn to thing, then we really have to worry.
You're going to have a sitcom with a guy named Steve and a guy named Nabisco.
Well, one kind of thing that people are definitely watching, or at least Amazon thinks they're watching, is video games. Twitch TV, which is a website that grew out of, I think it was Justin.tv, was one of the original kind of pieces on that, it's a web streaming platform that is primarily for games, and it's I think it's supported by PS4. I don't know if it's supported by Xbox, the new Xbox, but definitely by PS4. There's a link, and you can set it up so you can hit the share button, which apparently is a thing on PS4 controllers. I didn't know that until just recently when I was handed a PS4 controller for the first time. And I'm like, hey, what's this button do?
Don't press it.
So apparently you hit it, and if you've set everything up right, it will fire up your channel on Twitch TV, and anyone can check it out. I mean, I sort of understand that. Like, you want to record, like, you know, triumphant game moment for prosperity, but posterity rather. but at the same time, people are using it for prosperity. I guess there are some number of people that are prolific video game streamers, or there are channels that get a lot of hits, and similar to kind of the YouTube algorithm, there are ads and ad revenue that come along with channels that have a lot of subscribers or things like that. And it's kind of I mentioned the YouTube thing because I was under the impression that Google was actually going to buy Twitch TV. There was some talk of that kind of earlier in the year, and I know that Twitch TV recently came down on having music in their streams at all, especially their recorded streams, to make sure that they don't have copyright issues. And that was very much a Google YouTube sounding thing, because I know that YouTube has a like a content scrubbing algorithm that will find music, and then if you're not the copyright owner, it will blank out the audio. And that's essentially what Twitch TV did. So I was assuming that was a move because they were going to get bought by Google. But it was interesting because the news today is that they're being bought by Amazon.
Well, actually, in the article we're going to link, it was a deal with YouTube that fell apart.
Oh, okay.
Like in the last couple of weeks.
Hmm.
So that you're right on.
So I guess they wanted too much money, or there were other kinds of things that were going on. I don't know. I have never thought, hey, I want other people to watch me play this game.
I've never thought, hey, I want to watch other people play this game. I'm going to come out and say, at least on my behalf, I'm not going to speak for you, Alan, in this case. Plenty of other times I'm fine doing that. But right now, I'm just speaking for myself. Twitch, not a thing.
Yeah, I mean,
That was the worst part of playing video games as a kid, was when you have four controllers and there's like seven people over. Three people just had to sit there and watch.
I guess I still have a little bit of that that mentality for when games used to be two-player, and this is mainly a thing for me and my brother, where it would be a two-player game, but it wasn't really a two-player game. It was a two-player game in that player one played, and then when player one died or whatever, player two would play essentially over the same set of everything while like player Mario. One watched. So there's kind of a like a serial aspect to game playing and watching, and that's I think they're. I mean, there are some things about that are interesting in that we would learn like how I played it versus how he played it. But for the most part, it's the same game. So there's not a lot of novelness in watching someone else play it unless, you know, that someone else is playing it in a very, very novel way. So one very interesting thing, and this is not hosted on Twitch. I'm pretty sure it's they avoided Twitch in order to be able to kind of be autonomous should anything happen to Twitch. And I think it was good on their part. It was there's a group, and I have to look up the exact name, but they do speed runs of games, and they have a kind of conference, or I'm not sure exactly what you'd call it, but they have a gathering where people who are the best at doing the speed runs would join together, and they would they were streaming it and taking donations as a way to kind of keep the conference afloat. And it was the name of the conference was like Games Played Quickly or something like that, and it was mostly speed runs of games. So it's people playing through like Super Mario Brothers in 15 minutes or something like that. And some of those things were really, really fascinating to watch. I was really impressed by I think it's Ninja Gaiden, just the first ones for like original NES. Because I really remember playing through those, and there were a couple moments of like, oh, I remember I used to do that to like skip what my brother and I would call it when whenever you would be hit by an enemy, you would kind of bounce away from where the enemy hit you. So if he hit you on the left, you would bounce to the right, etc. And you would kind of bounce up like no matter where you were. So if you were already in the air and you got hit, you would bounce upwards a little bit and kind of away. So it was almost a way to double jump. I mean, you would take like a one bar hit, but it turned out that they were using that in the gameplay as a way to kind of skip ahead in the stage, which I thought was hilarious because I remember doing it inadvertently. And even then, my brother and I would call it like skipping the stage. So it's hilarious. But one of the best ones that they did, and this is the one I'll link, is there's a guy that played all the way through until the last stage of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out blindfolded. It's pretty impressive because it's 100% memorization. I think there are some audio cues in that game, but for the most part, you just have to know, okay, I'm going to count, hit the button, count, hit the button. That's a level of dedication I don't even know how you begin to do.
Well, you start by not having a lot of friends and not a lot of work. That's pretty much a starting point.
Yeah, that's, I guess
you probably don't have a high priority of personal hygiene. And that I'm not trying to, you know, that plays into the nerd stereotype, but those people are different.
And as someone going to the Penny Arcade Expo in just 3 days, I am well acquainted with the nerd stereotype.
Oh yeah, you'll see them. You'll see and smell them firsthand.
Hopefully not too much, but I'm sure there'll be kind of more stuff about Twitch and gaming and stuff like that. There, that'll be kind of an interesting side story, if anything at all. I know that every year Twitch has had a booth, so if it's if they're selling Kindles and stuff there, I'll know for sure that the Amazon deal went through.
The whole idea of Twitch is you're watching someone play a video game that you probably own and play because you're interested in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched my friends play lots of video games, taking turns, whatever, that's when you don't have the option to play yourself. Very right. rarely is it, oh, yeah, I can play. Oh, no, I'll just sit and watch.
I think I have... I don't think I've ever looked at a Twitch stream necessarily, but I have looked at streams of video games in order to see what the gameplay is actually like, because I was thinking about buying it or not. But that is such a... It's such a... like, you don't... Amazon would not spend $1 billion for that service. So... there must be something else I'm missing about how...
Or I'm not in that demographic. I definitely know I'm not. But maybe it's a larger demographic than I'm giving credit for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know a demographic that we're definitely into is fans of the movie The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a large demographic, the Chinese.
I guess I could have gone one of two ways with that.
And that is the preferred nomenclature. And by the Chinese, I mean the Chinese in China.
Yes.
You know, the country of China.
Yes, yes, exactly. So the reason I was bringing up The Hunt for Red October is if you haven't seen the movie, you should really do that thing we were talking about earlier. Stop the podcast, go watch the movie, and then come back. It's really a shining example of what a good movie looks like. But in short, one of the great kind of bits of it is that there's a submarine, and subs are awesome. It's really cool. And so it really started for me anyway, a kind of an interest in kind of underwater, like, propulsion and technology and stuff like that. And so there was this great story that is coming out of China that supposedly they're working on a submarine that can get from... It was some ridiculous thing. That it could get from China to San Francisco.
Shanghai to San Francisco.
In how much time?
100 minutes. 6,100 miles.
Yeah. So clearly supersonic speeds, but underwater.
And, well, it's made in China. It'll be good for like 3 trips and then it's going to break.
Well, it'd still be fun to do, you know, 3 times anyway.
Yeah, I'd only go the second. You never want to be the first person on something like that. You don't want to be the last. So like right in the middle.
So the way it does this is... it moves supersonically through the water by creating essentially a big bubble around the sub. So it has something on the front of the sub that I guess blows bubbles really fast, essentially. And then it has essentially rocket motors on the back, and the bubble that it forms means that there's no water drag on the, you know, on the craft itself, and so it can go essentially as fast as you can make those rockets go. I think the term they use is super cavitation to describe how it works, and apparently it's already in use in torpedoes. Yep. That's how torpedoes can go over 200 miles an hour, which is kind of phenomenal. But
Russian technology.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, we just need Admiral Ramius to come over and then we'll be okay.
What, he got a promotion?
I think it's really interesting technology. It because it's in the hands of the Chinese military. I'm actually surprised. That means that they're not ripping it off of somebody else.
I mean, they're ripping it off from the Russians.
Fair enough.
And actually, I was doing some reading, and that rocket-propelled torpedo that the Russians have, they go like 230 mm-hmm. miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
are in use on Typhoon-class submarines, which is what the Red October was.
Exactly.
So he really could have one. If he wasn't Scottish.
Oh. Well, I think the magneto hydrodynamic drive would probably be at odds with like kind of a rocket propelled drive.
Right.
It's like you can go really fast or you can go really slow but quietly.
I would go for, as long as you're faster than the torpedoes, who cares?
Right. That's a very good point.
Although I don't think you're going to get a submarine to go faster than a torpedo. I'm no scientist.
Well, the one I think disturbing thing about it, and the article is actually really good. It goes in depth about how the craft would work. But one of the things that it they mentioned that in order for it to steer at all, they can't do what you'd normally do with like a craft and have fins or whatever, because any fins are also going to be encased in this bubble. So it's not going to be able to interact with the water in order to, you know, turn the craft or anything like that. So the way that they steer is that, I guess, in addition to the air being blown out the front in order to make a bubble, it uses, and they're very vague about this, a liquid lubricant that they can essentially release. You know, in controlled amounts, in order to increase or decrease the friction of the craft. So essentially, it's like squirting stuff out in order to slow down or speed up one side of the craft to turn it. And you know, as much as cool as this is, I can't imagine that, you know, blowing through the water at supersonic speeds. Secreting like goo in the water to turn and blasting out rocket exhaust can be in any way good for the environment.
I don't think you have to worry, Alan. China has a stellar record when it comes to the environment. They would never do anything to jeopardize the future of the planet by polluting it.
Oh, I guess you're
Well, I mean,
right.
and this is a great idea until you hit your first whale at 200 and something miles an hour.
Right. Yeah. This is probably going to be a little dangerous.
Cool technology, terrible idea.
Yeah, I think I'll stick to flying in the air. 'Cause nothing bad happens to planes.
Well, yeah. And whales are way cooler than birds, so there's some fancied up dinosaurs.
Well, you know, those will eventually be, you know, a thing of the past once we set up enough solar towers. If you listen to last week's
Yeah,
show,
birds will be a thing of the
streamers, hashtag
past.
streamers.
Oh, don't start that. Unless you want to pay me to say that, hashtag flat earth.
Yeah, it's been good. A little update about our Bitcoin mining that will save us all. Something happened over the weekend. I'm not exactly sure what, but the Bitcoin mining has actually taken a dive, and we're making a lot, not a lot, but enough less money, essentially per hour or whatever, that the current break even point for the for 1 year of the show is 3 years from now. So don't maybe not Bitcoin mining for your next endeavor, everybody. I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to repurpose that hardware, but I'll have to think about it. Maybe I can think of something good this weekend. So I mentioned a little earlier, I'm going to the Penny Arcade Expo. We've done it. I think this is our 5th year this year to do that. Last year, yeah, a lot of fun and talked about it afterwards. So we'll definitely be doing a show talking about that. But also happening this weekend is our NFL fantasy football draft.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. I think I look forward to that every year. The the fantasy football part, not so much the draft.
I think the draft might be one of my favorite parts.
I kind of wish that we could do that more live. Like if we, I don't know if it supports like voice chat for that. That would be hilarious and probably make for a very blue podcast episode. Maybe not something that people would be able to follow, only because there'd be a lot of like quiet and then, oh man, or quiet and then, you had to talk with him, kind of notes in the
expletive deleted, expletive deleted. Yeah.
But I have been part of a live draft, I think, once, and that it is kind of fun to see how everything breaks out and do that. That would actually be fun to do, like if we could all be like in the same room, that would be hilarious.
Well, if Jürgen wants to fly up from Norway, we could talk about it.
Yeah, that's one of the things about having a popular yet distributed group of people that are into the sport. So there's trade-offs. I'm certain it'll be a good year. Are you looking to repeat?
Always. I'm gonna win. It's decided. Excellent. And not just because I'm the commissioner of the league. I can't collude with myself. So really, I'm above reproach. Yeah.
Collusion, not a thing. At least in the gridiron grudge match, is it nine?
Nine, yeah.
Excellent.
Next year, we're actually working in development on a trophy for this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in development. More to come.
Cool. Excellent. Well, Brennan, I will talk to you next week after PAX. Hopefully we'll have a good wrap-up show for that. And yeah, good stuff this week.
Yeah, represent us well there, Alan. You're there on behalf of the podcast. Put your best foot forward.
Yeah, let's see if I can, maybe I can
do a press pass.
Yeah, maybe I could do some remote stuff and get some, I don't know.
If you could do some man on the street stuff, that'd be great.
I'll see what I can do. I don't know if
if you're stuck in a line waiting for something, just pull out your phone and record somebody.
yeah. It let's see if we can get anything podcast worthy. Right on, Brennan. I'll talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.